Okay, hi everybody, and we are on the Techniques of Integration webinar commentaries number 6, and we have been working on the first ray up to this point. The first ray soul integrating its personality of whatever nature, and this is taking place around page 354, we concluded with some speculations about the same type of pattern that might be found with the reorientation of any soul ray type, because every soul ray type has to, in a way, reverse the wheel and begin counteracting the tendencies which had kept it attached to personal material satisfactions to be found in the three lower worlds. So a type of reorientation is needed, and what is apparent is that these reorientations occur through the use of different personality rays, even at last the same personality ray as the soul ray, though the example is given for the first ray soul type. We can perhaps assume that it would also occur for the other soul ray types. We do not know for sure, but the analogy would be there. And the various rays other than the soul ray would be of use in helping with that reorientation away from the personal expression of soul ray energy, seeking personal satisfactions towards integration into a wider context in service of the plan. So, in any case, there is much to learn about these sequences of lives, much to learn. And perhaps before too long, we'll be put in a position where we can study them with accuracy and understand what the plan is in a deeper sense. Well, let's go on to Ray 2. So here we have the Ray 2 technique of integration. So let's read it first and then analyze it. Again, I stand a point within a circle and yet myself. The love of love must dominate, not love of being loved. The power to draw unto oneself must dominate, but into the worlds of form that power must someday fail to penetrate. This is the first step towards a deeper search. The word goes forth from soul to form. Release thyself from all that stands around, for it has naught for thee, so look to me. I am the one who builds, sustains, and draws thee on and up. Look unto me with eyes of love, and seek the path which leads from the outer circle to the point. I at the point sustain, I at the point attract. I at the point direct and choose and dominate. I at the point love all, drawing them to the center and moving forward with the traveling points towards that great center where the one point stands. What mean you by that word? We notice that the capitalization of the term word here and the lack of capitalization of it a little earlier on. Let's see if we can find this. Here it is. In Yes, here we see that the word is not capitalized. Here it is, and yet it seems to be the same word, although we might say that this word goes forth, which goes forth from the soul to form, is not the completeness of the word as we find it here, or at least it's not a completeness of the word which the second aspect is. The word is formative through sound. It creates a pattern through sound, and the second ray is especially the pattern-creating ray. This is, at least in the subtle sense, and in the more concrete sense, the seventh ray creates the patterns, or makes sure that the patterns appear in matter. It has the skill to do that. So again, we have to ask why the word again is used. So this has been going on for some time, a point, a recognition. A recognition which is repeated because the consciousness has not moved on from the stage in which it recognizes itself as a point within a circle, not the circle. There are many, many circles, and at least it recognizes that the circle of its environment is not the entirety. So the circle of environment is not the great circle, but it is a sphere or a circle within which the life is lived. So one recognizes oneself as a point, but always the idea of the circle is found. There is, from the first, the sense of something greater than the point itself. There is, let's see, attachment. We have here a point within a circle, a taking with, an attachment to, a taking with of the surroundings. Attachment to the surroundings, because always there is the environment. There is not the tendency to think of oneself alone, but to think of oneself in the midst of others. So the tendency to think of oneself in the midst of others who are other points, perhaps within the same circle. So there is this glamour connected with the second ray, the ability to sense the whole and yet remain apart. To sense the whole and yet remain apart. So although the encompassing, enveloping circle is sensed, there is still this ahamkaric principle. One has not yet become the circle at the beginning here. One has not yet become the circle. One is still oneself within the circle. Later, there will be the idea that I am this larger circle and all that is contained within the circle, and rings pass not will continue to expand, and with each expansion, one may think of oneself as all that is contained within the circle. One begins to pervade all that the circle includes, and one becomes, in a sense, a relinquished point, as in Leo, or one becomes all points equally. So there is still a stage of isolation. Let's say there is not yet complete, well, let's just say integration with the circle and all its other points. Now, the circle is the, let's call it the circle of consciousness. And thus, it continues to expand as consciousness expands. And this is, of course, the great theme of the second ray and those upon it, the expansion of consciousness, and with that expansion, the inclusion in the field of consciousness of all who are touched by that consciousness. And that inclusion becomes eventually identification. So eventually, we have to say, eventually, EVTL, we have first inclusion, quite naturally, not so natural for the first ray type, and then identification afterwards. So what will be the relation of this second ray soul? A second ray, we remember, there's a contrast here. Think of the first ray. For you, there must be not a circle, but a line. And we might almost say the reverse for the second ray type. The reverse. For you, there must be not a line, but a circle. As a matter of fact, first ray virtues, the line, of course, represents the number one geometrically. So the lineness and the first ray fit together. The circle represents in many ways the number two, or at least how the inclusive, all-identifying first ray expresses in a second ray system. Sometimes the point within the circle is considered to be the symbol of the first ray, but I don't know if it is the best example of that. Certainly the point of pure being is there, but the encompassment of the second ray, it seems, would be that which the point within the circle indicates. At least here we have it. Again, I stand a point within a circle, and yet myself. This is, we have to notice that this is not yet the central point, simply a point, and perhaps a decentralized point, as there are many points noticed within this circle. Of course, everybody, in a sense, is a point within a circle. There is the circle of consciousness, or maybe we should call it the sphere of consciousness, and there is the point of, well, ontological sentiency, or the point of being sentient, if I can put it this way. At the center of the circle is the point of being, and maybe sentiency, being and sentiency together, being sentiency. I've called it the point of being consciousness. Well, anyway, how do we get out of this situation? Because, again, tells us of a repetitive perception, perceived in more or less the same way during every incarnation. Again, I stand. When I begin to wake up, a point within a circle, some circle of awareness, and yet not the circle of awareness. I am within my own circle of awareness, and yet I am not yet identified as the circle of awareness. That will come later, until there is a suffusion of the developed consciousness through all forms within the planet, and eventually through the solar ring past knot, and eventually, at least theoretically, throughout the entire universe, although that is, you know, of course, simply theoretical, being the tiny mites we are, in one sense, We are the entire expanse of the universe, but we also are, from the point of view of encapsulation, tiny with respect to universal expanse. Of course, universal expanse is really, you know, as I've often said, I'm working out on the theme of what I call the ultimate negligibility. The ultimate negligibility meaning the smallest possible thing, the ever-lessening thing. So what do we do now when we discover ourselves to be a point within the circle of which we are always aware, and yet myself, in other words, ahamkara is still prevailing, and the sense of being a separated self is still with us. The love of love must dominate. Now, right away we see the love of love, this is not a form. Let's say love is an energy, and it's the love of the energy of love which must dominate. When we use the word dominate, I can't help but think of the dominant in music, which is vibratorily 3/2, and which is always associated with the second aspect of divinity. So there is here the need for the dominant. Let's call it musically. There is the need for the, technically speaking, the dominant note. That's the dominant. Or if we were to start on the note C, and that's the G up there. C, D, E, F, G, that's the dominant. And it resolves. So, musically, how about spelling that word correctly? There is the need for the dominant. So the love of the energy of love must dominate, and not this love of being loved, which reinforces the separative, sensitive center. So it reinforces the lower ego and the sense of being an appreciated a point of selfhood. Nothing like appreciation to give oneself the sense that, after all, you do exist. I'm thinking of, you know, how the performer reacts to applause, at least in the early days when one is performing for the sake of the me they will love and me they will adore, me they will like and me they will adore, as it says in the fourth ray, law of repulse. So, the love of being loved reinforces the egoic center. The love of being loved, the love of being loved works against decentralization. So we have to learn how to relinquish the love of recognition. This is one of the four relinquishments found in the 11th rule for disciples and initiates. So the fourth, the four relinquishments, among which is the relinquishment of recognition. As Master DK says, you know, the masters so often, it is their disciples that get the recognition for what the masters basically have given to them, and the masters work behind the scenes with no recognition at all. But they have given up the desire for recognition, because recognition simply reinforces the ahamkara. Maybe I'll make a principle out of this. Recognition reinforces ahamkara. So so many of those on the fourth ray, they have the love of, on the, did I say that? Maybe it's true too. On the second ray, So many have the love of being in love and the related glamour of the love of being loved, because generally one is in the love relationship because of the feeling of what it is to be loved. But there comes a time when the giving of love is far more satisfying, let us say, than the receiving of love. The receiving of love is often very helpful and can lift one in moments when one is down, and can give one the sense of being valued and being integrated into a larger system. But as the Christ said, it's better to give than to receive. And of course, the interesting thing is that when one gives love, one automatically receives it in time. The power to draw unto oneself must dominate, but, you know, which self? Which self? Rather, the self, the immaterial self, and not the tangible self. If somebody loves you for what you look like or for what you are as a personality, it may be that they are simply loving the appearance and have not detected the soul that is the cause of the appearance. So we must love each other as souls, which means we must be aware of each other's qualities. The power to draw unto oneself must dominate one's, I want to call it here, one's true self must dominate. But into the worlds of form, that power must someday fail to penetrate. So we don't want to, we do not want to draw others to our form and engage them in the love of our form. Well, it's almost inevitable at first, before we learn with spiritual discernment to discriminate the true being behind the appearance. So many people try to be, you know, personally magnetic. So this is not personal magnetism, which is a glamour of the second ray, the glamour of personal magnetism. I think I'm correct there. I know there's a, well, there's, could be a glamour of the first ray, too. Let's just check this out. We go to page, let's see, Glamour World Problem, around page 122 or so, a little bit 121. The glamour of, well, the love of being loved and personal wisdom. And maybe it's here the personal magnetism is the glamour of the first ray, but personal attractiveness, we might say. The glamour of personal attractiveness or personal lovability, I think, is a glamour of the second ray. Well, not personal magnetism, a glamour actually of the first ray. But let's see here. But there is the glamour of personal lovability. You know, see how lovable I am, and how attractive, and how magnetic, yes, how radiant I am. See me, you know, the see me game, which emphasizes, in the eyes of others, the personality. It just reinforces the ahamkara and works against decentralization. It should be more see that, see thee, than see me, unless the me is the one great me. A word can be the same word, and in different contexts means different things. So into the worlds of form, that power to draw unto oneself must fail to penetrate. We don't want to engage them in the love of our form. It's not personal magnetism. We do not want to attract others to our personhood, to our personal self. And this is the first step towards a deeper search beyond ahamkara, beyond the form. What will we find beyond the form? What will be found? So learning of the love of the energy of love and relinquishing the love of being love, which reinforces the ahamkara, the sense of being the separated self at the center, this is all part of a step towards a deeper search, a search for the intangible reality of selfhood. And it is this self which must draw others unto itself. So, you know, are we in, well, there are probably different phases here, you know. One can seek to attract others to one's personal self by emphasizing any of the vehicles, you know, the one's vitality, one's emotional responsiveness, one's mental brilliance, all that. It's all part of attracting others to oneself for the outer qualities which one has. But to blend with another soul, blend with thy brother's soul and see him as he is, only upon the plane of soul can this be done. Elsewhere, the blending feeds the fuel of the outer life, or the outer life, something of that nature. It's in a treatise on white magic. We are allowed to enter our brother's heart and to, well, how does it go? It's in treatise on white magic, and it's so important. Blend with thy, well, that ought to do it. Blend with thy brother's soul and know him as he is. Only upon the plane of soul can this be done. Elsewhere, the blending feeds the fuel of the lower life. Then focus on the plan, thus he will see the part that he and you and all men play, and thus will he enter into life and know the work accomplished. So you're allowed to enter thy brother's heart and enter thy brother's mind. Enter, yes, but not blend with, otherwise we will feed the fuel of the lower life, and then it will obscure the real being. So our deeper search is for the core of love, for the real loving soul consciousness within each form. That is what we somehow must find, and when we learn to use magnetism or the energy of love, not to attract to our outer self, but to attract towards our inner self, which is the same as the inner self of others, then we have achieved. So we seek to attract to the inner self, which is the same self as that of our brother, sister, the same self. Because if we attract to our inner self, at the same time we bring the one attracted closer to their own real selfhood, because our selfhood is the same as their selfhood. So this is a requirement from the soul perspective. The requirement, the love of love must dominate, not love of being loved. The power to draw unto oneself must dominate, but into the worlds of form that power must someday fail to penetrate. This is the first step towards a greater search. Then the word, and, you know, should it be capitalized? It's, since it is, should this be capitalized? Because it is the word of the soul, or the word is an aspect of the word. The word goes forth, as it always does, because when the word goes forth, integration will take place. When the word goes forth, well, I like to capitalize it, goes forth, then the integration process with the soul is proceeding. And this is interesting, you know, the first ray type has to learn attachment. But in a way, the great pairs of opposites, or at least the major opposing energies of repulsion and attraction, are epitomized in the first and second rays. So the method is different. The method here is release. We're not going to tell the first ray type to release himself, because he already stands in a sort of splendid isolation, impervious to the feelings of those upon whom he has trampled. So he needs to engage in an emotional and sentient manner with his environment. But here, release thyself. Let's say this is disengagement from the environment, to which the unit is too attached. Release thyself from all that stands around. It's so difficult. I'm remembering the Tibetan speaking to one of his disciples, Roberto Saggioli, FCD, freedom from ties, his first letter, chelaship, and then detachment. So two of them being very similar, freedom from ties and detachment. I suppose one of his tasks was to discriminate between the meaning of freedom from ties and detachment. Release thyself from all your attachments. The Buddha would say the same, from all that stands around. So the whole idea of the circumstance, that is, that which stands around, circumstance. And you know, Saggioli had a very strong second-ray soul, maybe a second-ray monad, I cannot say, but certainly a second-ray astral body, in which both his soul and personality were focused, which is an amazing thing. And his very first requirement was freedom from ties. He was so tied to everyone around him. He was a psychologist. He had many patients. He was trying to help them, and he was attached to them. They were attached to him. And he needed that first-ray power of release from those magnetisms which held him in the world of form and allowed other people to hold him there as well. So release thyself from all circumstance, from all that stands around, for it has naught for thee, and we might say, any more. Maybe it used to. But now the time of freedom has arrived. A time for disidentification with all that stands around. So look to me. Well, who's talking? Let's just say the soul is talking. And the soul is the more real self on the higher mental plane. Actually, it's more than that. Who is the real self? The real self is the point of pure being within any vehicle and on any plane. The self is exactly and only what it is. But there is the self in various guises. A lower guise within the personality, a higher guise within the soul, still a guise within the monadic vehicle, not the true and absolute self by any means. And so through monadic retraction, these guises will become more and more attenuated until, at the destruction of the universe, the true self will stand forth as the one and only, without any medium or vehicle of expression. So look to me. Look to me, the soul is speaking. Look to that inner part of yourself which resides upon the higher mental plane, and through which the angel of the presence and the solar angel, really one thing, are speaking. I am the one, and it's a capitalized one because it is spiritual divine, we might say. Capitalized because spiritual divine. I am the one who builds, the great form builder, builds your vehicles, has made your personality possible. I have built your personality. I, the soul, have built the personality through through which you, the monad in attenuation, are now expressing. Because, you know, it's really one monad speaking to another. I mean, whenever we have any kind of conversation, it's monad to monad, really. There's only one person home, you know, it's the monad. Although not recognized as such because of the vehicles surrounding it. I am the one who builds, sustains you, keeping you in incarnation through my meditation and through the divine breath. So I, the soul, keep you in incarnation through the sounding of the word you are, and when I stop sounding, you disappear. Or the you think you are disappears, and you become the you have always been. But anyway, I sustain you in the world, and I build and rebuild your personality processes so that the vehicles remain. And I am the one who draws thee on, see, towards the greater light and up towards thee. Well, you know, whether we're drawn on, when we're drawn on, we're really drawn in. When we are drawn onward, we are really drawn inward towards our own central reality. So it's the soul that is asserting, the solar angel, angel of the presence, asserting its magnetism upon the person and sending forth these streams of higher energy. It talks about it in a treatise on white magic, these streams of idealism, of higher impulses, all sent rhythmically from that higher being who has in part fused itself with us, with our egoic nature on the higher mental plane. These things are sent into our personality consciousness, so, and they are magnetic. So there's a constant drawing of the second aspect upon the third. The second aspect of divinity draws upon the third. The soul draws upon the personality. Onward, well, we might say onward, inward, upwards, towards a greater vibratory state, towards a higher vibratory state. So look to me with eyes of love, not to the outer forms. Look unto me and not unto the outer forms, which really are less lovable. Look to me, because I am all things. I am found in everything. When you look to me, you are looking into the essence of all others as well. Look unto me with eyes of love. So love the soul, which is love. No matter what the ray may be, the soul represents the second aspect of divinity. The soul is love. So look to me with eyes of love and seek the way of behaving, seek the path, the way of thinking, the way of acting, which leads from the outer circle to the point. This leads from identification with the periphery and with formal superficialities to identification with the real being, who is myself, really the real you. So it's almost as if the point is now at the center of the circle, a point within a circle and yet myself. You know, it is possible, we could say, as I have said, that many points are included within the circle, or just one point within one's own circle, which is intersecting with other circles. There's a couple of ways of looking at this. But it seems that one is becoming increasingly aware of all those within one's circle of consciousness. It is true that one discovers oneself as a point within a circle, the circle of one's energy system, the circle of one's consciousness, but inevitably the contents of consciousness is larger than just this important, self-important sentient center, and embraces others as well, even though the ability to identify with them is not yet achieved. And seek the path which leads from peripheral things to the main point, we might say. So, seek the path which leads from involvement or identification with peripheral things to the main point, which is me. Not is, but me. I am the main point. I, in the larger sense, am the main point. Of course, all points are included within one point, and that is the great point. So the I won't say that a point is infinitely divisible, because it has no dimension, really, but in some mysterious occult way, all points are contained within the main point. Everyone considers himself the main point, but by going more deeply into what that point is, he discovers that it's just an emanation or a fragment of a still greater point, and on and on and on, until we reach the one main point, which is the universal logos, the very point which manifests itself as a universe. So look unto me with eyes of love. Love the soul. Love the love within you. Love the energy of love within you. And disengage from all peripheral matters, from all forms, and find the essence within those forms. So find the conscious essence within, within the many forms with which you have identified yourself. So come to the center. You know, I'm pretty soon we're going to see, we will see here the need for centralization. Just as the in the old commentary we're told that the first ray who proceeded upon a line returns upon that line or comes back and stands and assumes the gesture of embracing, which is an inclusive gesture. But now he's being told here, the second ray type is being told to centralize and to disengage from the periphery. I'll call it, you know, disengagement from the periphery. And almost, you know, everything we involve ourselves with is peripheral, unless we have the spiritual discernment to see the conscious life within the appearance. We have to move from the obvious to the subtle, to the in-obvious. I at the point, so I, the living soul, sustaining, building, I at the point sustain, I at the point attract. But all here, I am the one who builds, sustains, and draws thee on and up. So we have to find the higher self within the obvious self. Find the higher self within the obvious self. The self which is close at hand. We move from identification with the self which is close at hand to the self which is apparently more remote, but with which we are essentially even more intimate, and in fact identical. Identical. Okay. So here's what I do, here's what I, the higher self, do in relation to my personality. I am the sustainer of the one with whom I have identified myself. I sustain that false self, that personality. I, the soul, at the point sustain, I, at the point attract towards the higher planes. Higher planes and towards higher realizations and towards a higher state of identity. I, at the point, also have a certain dominant quality of directing, choosing, and dominating eventually. So I direct the personality along its proper path, this proper path, which I have conceived for it before incarnation. I ultimately am the dominating force. I'm sounding the dominant, and I'm overcoming the third. I sound the dominant in music and overcome the third, whether minor or major. When the major third is sounding, I don't have so much work to overcome the third, because the major third is blending nicely. It's quite a Buddhic note, blending nicely with the soul note. And I choose a certain path. I choose the rays through which you, the personality, will manifest. I am the higher director, the one who chooses your equipment, and the one ultimately who is the dominant factor in your life once you reorient yourself. This is what I really am. So I have certain first ray qualities when I point the direction, when I use Saturn to choose the nature of the instrument through which I, the higher self, manifest, and when I ultimately dominate that instrument, not allowing it to have its way, I become the sole luminary in the microcosmic sky. I, the soul, do this. And the lesser luminary, the moon, which is the personality, must shine with the light reflected from me, I, the central point. So I am the point at the center now, and I should be. And the second-ray type has to realize this. The first-ray type has all too much centrality and has to decentralize. The first-ray type, second-ray type has to centralize. So the first-ray type has to decentralize. The second-ray type has to centralize, and that will be used as the word of power. I, at the, now this is a still greater destiny for what I really am. I, the soul. I am my higher nature. I, at the point, as the point, at the point, in my central position, actually love all in their essence, and not only in their form. I don't necessarily reject their form, but I love the essence which is within the form. So I am very inclusive. I love all. I have magnetism, an attraction for the souls of all. I attract the souls of all because I do not venture into the worlds of form, worlds of form. Well, I can love within the worlds of form, but I do not love the form as if it were a separate thing. When I see the form, I see the soul in expression. So there is no true love of the form. I love the form as an example and an extension of the soul. I, at the point, love all, magnetically drawing them to the center. And I would have to say here, towards their own center as well, and towards a center which should inspire them, such as the ashram, or the hierarchy, whichever. So I draw them towards myself as the center, soul to soul, let's just say, towards myself as a soul, soul to soul, towards great centers around which they should cluster or gather, the ashram, the hierarchy, eventually Shambhala. And ultimately, well, it all depends what we mean by the great point, but ultimately to the very heart of the universe, ultimately to that center, which is the very heart of the universe. Well, we won't get ahead of ourselves here, but clearly there are higher correspondences to this technique of integration which are operative in the dynamics of still greater beings. In a sense, the solar logos could be doing all these things as well, and logoi beyond him and so forth. I, at the point, really love all. This is the great quality of the Christ, unconditional love of the soul and essence, not necessarily of the form, drawing them to the center towards, and I would say, I didn't really include it, towards their own center, towards myself as a soul, as soul to soul, emphasizing that we are both centers in unitive relation with each other and ultimately the same center, and towards great centers around which they must cluster into their groups, into their ashrams, into the hierarchy, ultimately into Shambhala, and moving forward with the traveling points of light. Now a first-rate type of motion occurs, a first-rate type of motion, which is called progress onwards, moving forwards with the traveling points of light, because they too, they are like stars, which have their what's called proper motion. And that's something we always seek to measure with a star. In what direction is it moving and how fast is it moving? It seems to move laterally because of our own rotations and, well, revolutions. But really, each star has its own direction. Each star is a point of light moving towards amalgamation with another point of light, and on and on and on until amalgamation is achieved with the one and only point. Moving forward with the traveling points of light, traveling points of light are making spiritual progress. The traveling points of light are making spiritual progress. Moving forward with these progressing points of light, who are souls like myself, they are souls like myself. Well, they're really, you know, a being consciousness, or whatever I called it a little earlier, towards that great center where the one point stands. Well, this is relative. As I said, it's the very heart of the universe ultimately, but this could be for our planet, Shambhala itself, where the one point, the planetary logos, stands. So leading towards the one initiator. The one initiator. Come with me. I draw you to myself, but I'm moving too. and you want to move in the right direction, so come with me and we will move together as a unit. Ashrams are not just, I mean, if we're a member of an ashram, that ashram is on the move. We're not just static. It is a moving unit, moving into greater light and greater spiritual power, and we are, the Master is the point at the center, and he has drawn us to the center and towards his center, and we are now traveling points of light along with him, because he is moving towards a still greater light, and on it goes. Every point of light in the cosmos, it might be a galaxy, it might be a family of galaxies, is a point of light. They're all on the move towards still greater points of light, into which they will be absorbed until finally they are absorbed into the one and only point, the one and only cosmic point. So they're moving forward with the traveling points of light towards that great center where the one point stands. Let's call it, in a planetary sense, let's call it Shambhala Sanakumar, the planetary logos. And then comes a strange statement, and it is giving us a method to achieve integration, a method for the achievement of integration is given. And it is the, let's call it, the questioning of meaning. What mean you by that word? Well, it's the word of the soul, which has come forth into the consciousness of the personality, and this gradually illumined personality is trying to fathom what is the nature of that all-organizing word, which is the soul, and which has come forth from the soul, maybe as a slightly lesser word, but behind the lesser word stands the word, which the soul is, the name of the soul. This word, you could almost say, this word is the name of the soul. And one's penultimate identity. Penultimate identity. Ultimate. Right. Because the monad is more one's ultimate identity. But, you know, when you really get down to it, even if you think you've found your ultimate identity, you will be absorbed as one of seven into another one, which as one of seven will be absorbed into another one, until finally whatever ultimate identity is achieved at the dread point, at the one and only point of cosmos. But anyway, this method of questioning meaning is the manner by which the deeper search of the second-rate type proceeds. What does that mean? What does that mean? I had a singing teacher once, you know, and he was a joker, and a Leo fellow with a very strong fourth ray, Leo and Scorpio, and he always would make fun of me, you know, because I was even then of a kind of a philosophical cast. I was trying to be a singer, you know, and I was interested in all the old German art song forms, and he was an Austrian, he was teaching me these things, but he would poke his head out of the door and say, "What does it mean? What's the meaning of it all?" You know, he was, because he had understood my quest for meaning, and I had spoken to him about looking for the meaning of things, and so he joked about that. But that is the method of the quest, to search for meaning, which means the right place according to pure reason of any entity within a series of entities, of any item, of any factor within a series of factors. What is the relationship of this factor to all of the factors? When you have that, you have its meaning, because its proper place within the organized archetypal whole. This is meaning. So the secondary type, who is the geometer, always is seeking for that proper placement, proper function within the larger pattern. Then, when that's revealed, the meaning of any factor is revealed. And basically, when you're searching for meaning, you're asking, where does it fit? Where does it fit within the whole? How can I relate this to the context with which I am familiar? What is its meaning within this context, its position, its place, its function? What does it mean? So, this is Now I think we have analyzed this, maybe not quite satisfactorily, but certainly to some degree, and what I'll do is what I've always been doing. I'm just going to read through this and then read through it in an uninterrupted way. Just summarizing here, we might say, again I stand. After repeated incarnations, I stand in the same way. I am a point within a circle, and yet myself. There may be many points within the circle of my consciousness, or I may just be the point within a circle which tries to embrace other circles, intersects with them, expands and includes them. But basically, I'm still very much the victim of Ahamkara, and I'm not yet identified with the full expanse of my consciousness, my awareness. The love, and so now comes how to correct this situation, because so often the first sentence tells us the state of how it is in the beginning before a real and progressive integration has occurred. The love of love must dominate. It's an energy. And this must dominate my consciousness, and not the love of being loved, of being appreciated, of having my very important sentient self reinforced, of having my ahamkara reinforced by the energy of love. In other words, my formal prison is reinforced by loving to be loved. The power to draw unto oneself, which is a true love, to draw unto oneself as oneself, must dominate. You're seeking the dominant in music here. This is the dominant note. It is a magnetic note, and it's a drawing power. We're not pressing outward into life. We're standing at the center, and we're drawing others towards us on the basis of how we radiate. That must dominate. But into the worlds of form, that power to draw must someday fail to penetrate. I don't want to draw forms to me. I want to draw souls to me. I don't want to draw forms to my form. That's usually what's called falling in love, you know, and drawing one form to the form that I think I am, and then loving the form and having my form being loved by others. But true soul love is something else. It is quite regardless and irrespective of form, and this one has to learn. The power to draw unto oneself must dominate, but into the worlds of form, that power to draw must someday fail to penetrate, and usually fail to penetrate when one is on the path of probationary initiation and initiation. Then it will fail to penetrate, and one will love beyond the form. One will love that which one discerns within the form. And this is the first step, this deformalization, towards a deeper search, a search for the true soul, the true being within the true consciousness, that intangible something which is the higher self, at least intangible to us. The word goes forth. It's the word of the soul, whether it's the full word of the soul, no, but it is a representative of the word which the soul is. The word goes forth from soul to form. Release thyself from all that stands around. It's quite different. To the first rate type, it might say, well, attach thyself to all that stands around. But this is a different antidote, a different ray antidote. Release thyself from all that stands around, with which you are so very much engaged, so attached to, so unable to divorce yourself or separate yourself from. Release thyself from all that stands around, for it has naught for thee, not for the real thee, the thee that is trying to find itself, the thee that is the self it's trying to find, the seeker and the sought. I am the seeker and the sought. I rest. That's a six-ray kind of mantra. Release thyself from all that stands around, for it has naught for thee, for thy real spiritual progress, for thy real identification, for real self-discovery or self-realization. You're not going to find it in the world of form, although certain forms may have such an intuitive link with reality that they may wake a person up. Like we're told that one great sage was awakened by a fly. Okay, it all depends how one sees the thing. If one sees the thing in God, then it might as well be God. But if one sees the thing as just itself, then it may have no connection with the divinity from which it arose. For it has naught for thee, so look unto me. Look unto me, the soul. Look unto yourself as the higher self, who is speaking to you It is really you that is speaking to yourself. I, who am speaking to yourself, am really you. I am the one. At least on that level, I realize myself to be the one who is related to all others, and they are no different from what I am, even though their qualities may be different in that particular world of expression. I am the one who builds your vehicles, sustains your vehicles, and draws the consciousness immersed within those vehicles onward towards its goal and upward towards a higher level of vibration and inward towards reality. Look unto me, love me, and not the outer forms. Look unto me, the true soul, with eyes of love, for if you love me, you will love all, because they are souls, and their soul is one with my soul. So look unto me with eyes of love. Love this inner magnetic attractive drawing power, and not all the apparent evidences of this power in the outer world. Don't confine your love to form. Allow your love to expand into that which has been the cause of all the form. Love the essence and not the appearance. Look unto me with eyes of love and seek the path. Seek to do those things, those sequential activities, those particular choices which leads from the outer circle of your engagement with all kinds of things in a superficial and formal way to the point which I am, or at which I, the voice, the word, stand, and at which you, the voice, the word, stand. You are really a point. You are really a point within a circle, but what you don't know is that you as a point is really one with all other points and with the one great point. That you don't know. You think of yourself as an isolated point, but I'm speaking to you from a far more real point than the point you think you are. You're an ego-encapsulated point in your own conception, where I am an embracing, inclusive point, which is the real you. I, at the point, sustain all you are in the outer worlds. I allow through me, the energy of the monad comes, the life-giving energy. Through me, all quality reaches you. I, at the point, attract your outer self so that its quality is raised, its vibratory level is raised, its quality is purified. I attract you into amalgamation with myself, into union with myself. I, who am you, are attracting the you who you think you are towards the you who you really are. I, at the point, direct your way forward progressively so you can learn. I choose for you the different energies you will use. I choose where you will be incarnated. I will choose what energies you will have, astrological and rheological and planetary, to express that incarnation. And ultimately, I dominate the whole situation. I am the dominant note sounding over the third. I, at the point, the central point which you must find, because in finding it you will find your higher self, I, at the point, love all around me, all within this circle of consciousness, all this circle that I have been aware of, but yet kept viewed as if I was something different. I, at the point, love all, at least all within my range, within my circle. I may love all, but I cannot influence all. I, at the point, love all within my circle of consciousness, drawing them, the ones that can respond especially, to the center, which I am. And then, when they are within range and magnetized by me as a soul, soul to soul, I will move forward with them. And I will, in this case, be the magnetizing leader, moving forward with the traveling points, because all points are actually traveling also in a straight line according to progress onward and progressive motion. Moving forward, but I will light the way. Under the ray of light-bearing influence, I will travel forward to another great center, maybe into the ashram. Maybe I will help lead others into the ashram. Maybe, if more advanced, I will help lead them into the hierarchy as a whole. Maybe, if still more advanced, I will help lead them into Shambhala. But I have attracted points like myself, and I am an illuminator of those points, and I'm sharing my light with them, and they with me. But I, in this case, am the greater light, because I am the center and have attracted them, just the way the sun attracts the planets and so forth. And we will move all together towards that great center, in this case, ever onward towards Shambhala and the planetary logos, where the one point, who includes all points within our planetary ring Pasnat, has his stand, his location. Then the method is given. What is this word of the soul? The word as the soul, which has come forth to me. I think I will ponder. I will ponder until I understand its true meaning. And then I will be in a position to know myself as that word. The method then is given. It always seemed to me to be kind of a non sequitur, you know. But why now? Why after all this should a question be asked, except a great hint is being given as to the secondary method of approaching a deeper understanding and significance. So let's just read it. Ray 2, the technique of integration for Ray 2. Again I stand a point within a circle, and yet myself. The love of love must dominate, and not the love of being loved. Not love of being loved. The power to draw unto oneself must dominate, but into the worlds of form that power must someday fail to penetrate. This is the first step towards a deeper search. The word goes forth from soul to form. Release thyself from all that stands around, for it has naught for thee. So look to me. I am the one who builds, sustains, and draws thee on and up. Look unto me with eyes of love, and seek the path which leads from the outer circle to the point. I at the point sustain, I at the point attract, I at the point direct and choose and dominate. I at the point love all, drawing them to the center, and moving forward with the traveling points of light towards that great center where the one point stands. What mean you by that word? Okay, it's I think, you know, this is relevant really to so many of us, because we are found in our soul nature pretty much upon the second ray. Okay, I'm just trying to find my way back to the text. We are found upon the second ray, and we need this second ray integration technique. And, you know, these integration techniques, as I said, the full and complete integration, which is like a full and complete fusion of soul with personality, doesn't really occur until nigh unto the fourth initiation, with the merging or the interplay, the fusion of two energy systems and two types of consciousness, fused into one type of consciousness. So there are some pretty high states which are promised by these integration formulas. The formulas don't begin that way, but they do end that way. If you are traveling towards the great center where the one point stands, you're really, you know, traveling not only into the ashram with your group as an ashram, but the ashram is traveling into a closer connection with the center of hierarchy, and hierarchy itself is in a way being absorbed into Shambhala. So a very ultimate kind of absorption is being discussed in this little stanza. Remember that these stanzas cover time. They begin at one point of time, and they move through various other points of time, and finally end at a time which may be quite distant from the time which began with the first statements in the stanza. Okay, well, we're over the mark, of course, but this is end of Techniques of Integration Webinar Commentary 6, EP Psychology 2, and we're on page 355. We didn't move very far because we just really worked in one particular Technique of Integration stanza. So, and we'll be have at the beginning of Techniques of Integration Webinar Commentaries number 7, EP 2, page 355. Okay. So, that will, and then we'll go on, you know, because it's so important what the Tibetan has said. We can interpret however we like here, you know, you'll have your own interpretation, I have mine, I just suggest to you how you might think about these things, but maybe you're going to see something I just haven't seen. So often it happens. But later, the Tibetan amplifies, he elaborates, he describes what he sees in these stanzas. And so he gives it to us in ways that are not so symbolical, not so pictorial, not so mystical, but are more in the elucidating English that we know him for in all of its great clarity. So we'll move on. This has been an hour and 15 minutes, but okay, there it is. We'll see you for Technique of Integration webinar commentary number 7, continuing with the elaboration of the second ray technique.